live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Sullivan County Government Communications Director Dan Hoost joins us with the latest from the legislature, including a tax cap override, two new approaches to the housing crisis, and updates from the Human Rights Commission. Plus, we'll talk about upcoming public hearings on cannabis regulation and youth hunting laws, the county's new care center administrator, and how local teens are learning emergency response skills. On Curtain Call, our theater podcast from Tom Candela, Tom talks to the one and only Jonathan Charles Fox. Plus, culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaks to Karen Ellen, founder of The Muse, a high for the arts in Rosendale, discovering how the creative space came to life and what's happening there now. It's all coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump is on his way to Scotland for 4 days. He will visit his golf courses there. He'll also meet with British Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Before he left this morning, Trump spoke to reporters at the White House. He says that there's a 50-50 chance of reaching a trade deal with the European Union. He says talks with the EU are ongoing, and he compared it to the deal struck with Japan earlier this week.
But they want to make a deal very badly. I would have said we have a 25% chance with Japan, and they kept coming back and we made a deal.
Meanwhile, more big companies are reporting tariffs pain, but investors are shrugging it off, sending the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ to a series of record highs. NPR's Maria Aspen reports.
But they want to make a deal very...
General Motors, Chipotle, and Volkswagen are just some of the companies warning that tariffs, or the economic uncertainty they've caused, are eating into their business. Yet investors broadly remain optimistic. The S&P 500, which tracks the largest U.S. companies, has hit four consecutive records this week. The tech-heavy NASDAQ is having its most record-breaking month in 5 years. But tech giant Intel and its workers aren't doing so well. The chip company has struggled to compete with NVIDIA and other rivals in the artificial intelligence arms race. Now Intel says it will lay off 15% of its workforce, or 75,000 people, by the end of this year. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
France says it will recognize the state of Palestine as ceasefire talks have failed again and the humanitarian disaster in Gaza worsens. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports President Emmanuel Macron says there is no alternative.
Writing on X, Macron said France will recognize a Palestinian state at the UN in September. The urgent need today, said Macron, is for the war in Gaza to end and for the civilian population to be rescued. France had originally planned to recognize a Palestinian state along with Saudi Arabia in June, but Israel's war with Iran put the issue on the back burner. The U.S. and Israeli governments denounced Macron's decision, calling it reckless and a reward for Hamas. But Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez hailed Macron's move, saying it was the only way to protect the two-state solution and peace. Macron said a demilitarized Palestinian state that recognizes Israel will contribute to the security of all in the Middle East. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is bringing home its negotiating team for consultations about the war in Gaza. The Trump administration envoy says Hamas has shown a, quote, lack of desire to reach a ceasefire. Hamas says it's surprised and that it has shown responsibility and flexibility in negotiations. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials are down 10 points. This is NPR. President Trump won his election appealing to voter concerns about high prices, but recent moves by his administration may push more Americans into medical debt. Some may face bills they cannot pay. Noam Levy with our partner KFF Health News has more.
Millions of people who rely on Medicaid are expected to lose coverage in coming years, and many will have fewer protections from large medical bills if they get sick. That's a result of President Trump's big tax law. Meanwhile, premiums are spiking for Americans who buy their own health insurance. And those who can't pay their medical bills may face lower credit scores and higher interest rates. The Trump administration has rolled back rules to remove medical debt from consumer credit reports. The White House didn't respond to questions about how Trump policies could worsen medical debt, but patient advocates say the changes add up to more strain on family budgets, and more Americans joining the 100 million who already have health care debt.
That's Noam Levy with our partner KFF Health News. The parent company of CBS and other media outlets has a new owner. Paramount has been taken over by the Ellison family and Skydance Media. They reached an agreement with the Trump administration to secure the deal. Skydance has agreed to end Paramount's DEI initiatives in the U.S. Earlier, Paramount agreed to pay $16 million to settle a lawsuit by President Trump against CBS News. Extreme heat is lingering in the central and eastern U.S. Today, warnings are posted for St. Louis, Philadelphia, and parts of New Jersey. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One with the Capital One Saver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at MacFound.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Well, it's Friday and TGIDH.
I like that, but you have to, you got to turn my mic up.
Turn your mic on.
It's like I can hear myself.
TGIDH.
DH. That's cool.
Thank God it's Dan Hoost.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah, because TGIF is thank God it's Friday.
I knew that part. I actually knew all of it, too. You're not that dumb.
You're a smart man. He is the communications director for Sullivan County Government and joins us every Friday. Hello and happy Friday.
Hello to you as well, Tim. I think it's TGITB, right? There we go.
I don't know about
all
that.
Right. We want people to stay tuned in. I'm sorry. I will stop.
Let's get into the busy calendar of the legislature from yesterday's meeting. Lots to discuss. First, this tax cap override option. Let's remind folks about this tax cap override, that what that all means, and what was the result of the vote in the legislature yesterday.
I just like hearing you say the word override. So you put some oomph into it there. Well, the override is an option.
At the state level.
Yes. The state a few years back did a 2% property tax cap on all municipalities that assess property taxes in New York. And you can only override that if you have done a public hearing, which we did, and then give yourself the option to do so. These are all preliminary steps. The legislature voted 6-3 yesterday to give itself the option to override the tax cap. Doesn't mean that it will. That decision will be made probably around December as to whether or not property tax rates will have to increase beyond the 2% cap that the state puts into place. So we've fulfilled what the state regulations require. Now it'll be up to your legislators in December to determine whether or not for the 2026 budget, the fiscal year, that the county will need to hike taxes higher than a 2% increase. Right now, because of falling sales tax revenue, of course, increasing costs, we have most of our labor contracts we need to iron out this year, which will probably include increases in pay for those employees. That's all coming together along with the federal level uncertainty over what we will and won't get reimbursed for, what we will and won't get grants for. I'm told at this point that we are looking at exceeding the tax cap, but that will be up to legislators and nobody else. And three of the nine legislators were not in favor of even having the option to override the tax cap. That was District 9's Terry Blosser Bernardo, District 7's Joe Perrello, and District 4's Nick Salamone. And I have a feeling that they will stick to their guns on that as we go along. But again, who knows what the other 6-2 will determine when we get to December. So all this is to say, if you have something that you'd like to let legislators know about a potential tax increase, reach out to them, because this is the time to do so. Continue doing so right until December. They can explain to you what kind of challenges and difficulties they're looking at. You can explain to them the kinds of challenges and difficulties you're looking at, because, of course, nobody likes a tax increase of any size. But my job as director of communications is to convey to the public what they need to know so that they can talk to their elected officials about their priorities and concerns. And I'm happy as long as you do it politely. You don't just call up and scream and yell and rant. I'm happy to connect you with those folks because their phone numbers and email addresses are right on the website. And all of them are willing to talk to you directly on their cell phones, or you catch them in the grocery store or whatever. But you need to communicate.
And just to clarify again, this is not a tax increase, but it allows for the option of more than just a standard 2% tax increase should the county legislatures decide that that needs to go into next year's budget.
Yep. We're a little less, though, than half a year away from whether or not that actual exceeding will happen. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned. But also, like I said, stay in touch with your elected officials. Let them know how you feel, and also give them a chance to explain why they're making the decisions that they're making.
Mm-hmm. The legislature looked into or talked about the housing crisis, and there are a couple of options here. What are those options?
There's housing rehab, existing facilities, and then also constructing new housing. Much to my surprise, because I thought they were just going to discuss it yesterday, they actually voted on it. And I also thought they were aiming more for the rehab rather than constructing new to put funding towards, but they actually voted for both. It wasn't unanimous. There were two opposed, Joe Perrello and Nick Salamone, but it had 7 assents, so it passed. Now we have to put, I think there's going to be, the legislature is looking at about $2 million to put into that. Right now, the program's passed, but they haven't yet officially been funded. So it's not like something's starting today or tomorrow. But these programs will incentivize property owners, landlords, to rehab existing properties, including dilapidated properties that aren't maybe currently fit for housing but could be turned into that, and also to construct new affordable rental housing so that we have more options for people who are really out of options right now in Sullivan County.
The Human Rights Commission executive director also working on an online complaint form in light of excessive amount, it looks like, of complaints since they started that job.
He deals with a lot of complaints. Actually, most of them have to do with housing discrimination, mm-hmm. is what he told the legislature yesterday. So he's been a busy guy. He's a great guy. Ramon Wilson is his name. If you haven't met him, you should. He is just an incredible human being, very talented person in ways that you might not even expect, and just a very calm, level-headed guy, which you need in that kind of a job. He works with a volunteer human rights commission as well, which is getting up to speed because the commission has been defunct for the past few years. Ramon actually is our first full-time executive director of the Human Rights Commission. So he had 38 complaints since he started, 14 of which are currently active. And he continues to take them. If you have a complaint or a question to make, you can give him a call, 845-807-0189. That's 807-0189. And even if it's just to say, hi, I heard about you from TGIDH on WJFF. And he'll be like, what are all those acronyms? He's just we're lucky to have him. He's a great guy.
Well, there's 38 complaints since starting, 14 currently active. Is that abnormal? Is that sort of a normal number? Or
we don't know what normal is right now because this has been defunct for so long. Right. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. He's busy. He's not busy. He's not the type to complain, so I don't think he was saying that to the legislature to say, oh my gosh, I'm overwhelmed. That wasn't the case at all. He wanted to say, there's a lot going on. Listen, not every complaint is going to be legitimate. Some people may try to actually just do something for retribution, or they think they have a case and they don't actually have a case to make on it. But we take all complaints seriously. Ramon deals with everybody in good faith and due diligence. And if it really requires further investigation at like a criminal level or something, he will refer it up to the State Office of Human Rights. We don't actually have that kind of level of ability. We can start the process, but we can't finish the investigation. We don't have any authority to levy fines or penalties or take somebody to court.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday with an update from Monticello. Something alarming in Monticello, the Sullivan County Legislature joining a local coalition condemning anti-Semitic graffiti in Monticello. Where was this, and What's happened?
It was found in the Thompson Square Mall, the main shopping center of Sullivan County, on outdoors, one of the stores. I've heard it was on the sidewalk. Then I heard it was on like a post or whatever. I'm not exactly sure where it was. I saw a picture of it that didn't indicate exactly where it was, but it was graffiti that said Jews did 9/11. And it's something that the legislature actually had recently spoken out against, an anti-Semitic series of incidents, egg throwing in Fallsburg and Woodburn areas. And this continues to go with that, echoing the Sullivan County Coalition Against Anti-Semitism, which has recently created a number of local synagogues.
Ten local synagogues, yeah, and Jewish congregations.
And so they put out a press release about it, which alerted us to it. The legislature said, we want to put something out too, because we really want to have zero tolerance for this. And it's concerning to legislators because, you know, you see like on social media, people downplaying it like, you know, this doesn't matter, or, you know, well, I've had Jews be mean to me, so I could be mean to them kind of things. It's like, excuse me? What are we talking about here? We're talking about fellow human beings. They may look or act differently or believe differently, but that does not mean that people have any right, certainly, to deface public property, which that part is a crime. But to put out there, I mean, what are you trying to do? Jews did 9/11. And the legislature looks at this as, if we don't stand up against it, we let it fester. Yep. If we don't bring it to light along with this coalition, it will continue to creep up on us until something far worse than graffiti happens. And so each one of these cases, the legislature has been very proactive about, the coalition, of course, as well. We're glad to have them active in Sullivan County.
And Legislature Chair Nadia Reich came out with a statement calling it repugnant and concerning. Also saying, quote, whoever did this also committed a crime, and no yes. one in our community should shrug it off as harmless. As this legislature has noted before, we want our communities to be peaceful and welcoming, and we will continue to work with the Jewish community to ensure they feel safe wherever they are in Sullivan County. That's end quote from Legislative Chair Nadia Reich. Also, you mentioned that incident earlier in Woodburn in South Fallsburg, where some individuals of the Orthodox community were targeted with eggs, and the town of Fallsburg Police Department arrested and charged three individuals from neighboring Ulster County in connection with those assaults.
Mm-hmm. We were very glad to see that that happened, and if they are found guilty, that they are held accountable for what they did. Because, again, that was shrugged off as well. It's, oh, egg throwing, how's it going to really hurt anyone? Well, you try having an egg thrown at you. You know, it really is something that is disrespectful at a minimum, and at a maximum is really actually hateful.
It's hate, yeah.
It really is. And I wouldn't want to do that to any of my neighbors, and I wouldn't want them to do it to me. And that's the kind of community that we should all want to live in.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the new care center administrator and the sheriff's office continuing to solicit information on a missing teen couple from over 50 years ago.
Yes.
This is Radio Chatskill.
The New Yorker magazine turns 100 this year, marking a century of humor, social commentary, and great fiction. On this week's Selected Shorts, join me, Meg Wolitzer, and readers including Lois Smith and Cynthia Nixon as we celebrate The New Yorker's famous short stories.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
This week on This American Life, Josh visits the mean girl he knew in elementary school, and she's still mean.
They look right at you and say, I know you're garbage. You know you're garbage. Why pretend? And you're going to come over to my house, which is the biggest house I've ever seen in my life. And you're going to say, you see this garbage? This is what a real man provides for me.
Some people never get over it. The allure of the mean friend.
You know, you come here and you tape me for your stupid friend's radio show, and then you get the hell out.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Let's continue our conversation with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. There's a new care center administrator officially.
Yes, Kayshawn Macquarie, I think is how I think I said that correctly.
That.
So yes, I know how to spell it. But he's a great new hire we have as well. Somebody who just joined us, I think about a month ago. He actually was so focused on the job that he actually started coming before we officially hired him, just to see how the facility operated and to talk with people. But he is already a licensed nursing home administrator. And we put out a press release that is one of the longer ones I put out, but it tells a fascinating story about his background and how he really overcame a lot of obstacles and difficulties and challenges to become a very accomplished but also very caring and compassionate person. He had an aunt in his life who just encouraged him to always put others first, to care for the people around him. So he got involved in nursing. He got involved in counseling. And now he is our nursing home administrator, fully licensed, full time. Another one of those folks that if you're over at the care center, ask to talk to him and meet him, because he really is somebody that I think you would want to get to know, and we're proud to have him on staff.
And we're going to get to know him this Monday on the local edition.
That's
Monday,
right,
at 6. So
yes.
We'll have that interview with him as well. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some public hearings coming up, all on August 21st, it looks like, starting at 10 a.m. This first one is allowing 12 and 13-year-old hunters to keep hunting. So
right.
What is the state youth hunting law?
If my understanding is correct, it's typically 14 and above.
Right.
But you can opt in to allow 12 and 13-year-old hunters. The county has done this for several years. They kept having to update it every year. And so this is really to try to just make it concurrent with the state law until the state law sunsets. So it's not indefinite, but it's as close to that as possible. So there's just required to be a public hearing on this, and that will be August 21st at 10:10 a.m.
I will say that when I heard about 12 and 13-year-olds hunting, that my antenna went up a little bit, but mm-hmm. there is a...
Oh, no. They have to be
safety and
trained. Get their license and everything. Yes, all the same stuff that everybody older than them has to go through. But listen, we have 10, 11, 12-year-olds driving farm equipment in Sullivan County as well. This is just part of how it's been in the past, and it's something legislators unanimously feel is worthwhile.
And exactly 5 minutes later on the 21st, there will be at 10:15 a.m. A public hearing on enforcing regulations on local cannabis businesses.
Yeah, this may come as a surprise to some people. It did to me when I first heard about it. But our sheriff's office cannot do any enforcement action if local cannabis businesses are not following state law. State law actually only allows the state police or a similar state agency to enforce anything there. It's an interesting byproduct of the cannabis regulations that came into effect, a couple of years ago mm-hmm. or thereabout. But we can, if we pass our own local law, allow our sheriff's deputies to have enforcement authority at cannabis businesses. So that's what this public hearing will be about. Again, August 21st, 10:15 a.m., just about, are you okay with us letting our sheriff's office have the same enforcement powers as the state police do?
Anything prompting this other than noticing that this isn't part of the law, that there's been no incidents or concern there?
I think there have been some incidents in the county, nothing major, but if the sheriff's office finds out about it, they have to refer to the state police.
Right.
The state police are going to do something about it, but the sheriff's office would like to be able to have that power as well. And legislators, I think, are feeling the same way.
And in the 10-minute public hearing marathon on August 21st at 10:20, public hearing about the SUNY Sullivan budget.
Yeah, I don't know that people realize that SUNY Sullivan's budget does actually have to get approved by the legislature, because it is SUNY Sullivan. We fund a good portion. I think there's, I forget how many millions of dollars, at least $4 million of their budget that we fund. So they come every year to make a presentation, which I would assume there will be some sort of presentation made. And then there'll be this public hearing again on the 21st at 10:20 a.m. about the SUNY Sullivan budget. It's actually one of two chances you have to weigh in on the budget, because I believe SUNY Sullivan also has their own public hearing about the budget at their board meeting. I don't have information about that, but probably sunysullivan.edu does.
And the sheriff's office, speaking of sheriff's office, they've got an unsolved mystery, a cold case. They're continuing to solicit info on a missing teen couple from over 50 years ago.
Yep. This has been written about over the years from time to time because it continues to be an ongoing investigation. Not that it's necessarily active. I think they're just waiting for people to tell them. But there's a private reward still offered by the family of $10,000. Of Benita Bickwit and Michael Weiser, I think is how you say it. On July 27th, 1973, they departed from Narrowsburg to attend Summer Jam in Watkins Glen. It was sort of another one of those Woodstock follow-ups that happened. The teenagers were 15 and 16 years old when they began hitchhiking. After not returning home, their families initiated a missing persons investigation through our own sheriff's office. And we have been investigating that disappearance ever since. We have not found any evidence to show what happened. More recently, the sheriff's office and the state police have partnered together to investigate their disappearance with the hopes of bringing closure to the family of these young people. And they are urging anyone in the public who might have information or come across information to contact the sheriff's office. Easy number to remember, 845-794-7100. That's 794-7100. I wouldn't really say call 911 because it's not a life-threatening emergency, but you could get to them that way as well. Again, a private reward being offered of $10,000 to find out what happened to Bonita Bickwit, who was 15, and Michael Weiser, who was 16, disappeared somewhere between Narrowsburg and Watkins Glen.
Was there anything new recently that prompted this call from the sheriff's office? Well,
the family, I believe, probably gets in touch with the sheriff's office every few years because when I was working at the Democrat, there were at least two different occasions when we wrote stories about this. So I think it's just the family saying, can you keep this in the public consciousness?
Still looking for closure.
Because, of course, how awful that must be all these years later. It may be 50 years, but that loss is still very real, and it comes with a whole bunch of questions of what happened, why.
Let's talk about the Emergency Services Youth Academy. You've got 18 folks there participating in this. Tell folks about that.
I'll be going there right after this, actually, so for the final ceremony. All this week, we have had 14 to 16-year-olds, 18 of them, at our Emergency Operations Center near the county airport between White Lake and Swan Lake. This is the second annual one. We inaugurated it last year with just seven. Well, that was such a runaway success that we got, I think we got over 30 applicants, but we, in the end, could only accommodate, so almost three times as many as last year. So we wanted to not overdo it. We did have some of the kids from last year return this year, and now they're in more leadership roles, learning about and actually actively participating in exercises that would be involved in police training, in emergency services like ambulance training and firefighting training. They have done everything from learning CPR and first aid, which they get certified in, to tying knots, to flying drones, to breaking down doors. To the sheriff's office shows how they actually break in, not necessarily to go arrest a criminal, but somebody who has fallen ill and maybe is unconscious and can't answer the door. In fact, they said they do that more often than not. I think today they're going to have the LifeNet helicopter come in. The state police had their chopper come in. The canine officers had their dogs come. That's always a big highlight. I believe they also did search and rescue. And today they'll be doing some scenarios where they'll have to set up a command system so that everyone's organized in doing what they need to do. And then we'll have lunch and awards with their parents later today at the Emergency Operations Center. It is a wonderful program, a lot of fun. I wish this had existed when I was a teenager. I would have definitely been there, but I get to enjoy now by chronicling it. And the hope is that this will encourage and inspire these kids, and I think it is, to at least volunteer, if not consider a career in emergency services.
Speaking of chronicling, the Battle of Minisink, which was last weekend, was that commemoration that was filmed, and it's now online. Is it a TikTok?
I filmed the whole thing. Oh no, it's too long to be a TikTok. this is about a 45-minute event. You don't have to watch the whole thing, but actually, it's been getting quite a lot of views across our platforms. People may not realize Sullivan County has a YouTube channel. So that's where I recommend it's the easiest to watch it because it'll remember where you were in the video if you come back to it. But it had reenactors in period dress. They even fired some muskets, which was interesting. It had our county historian, John Conway, also in period dress. And it had our District 9 legislator, Terry Blosser Bernardo, who gave a wonderful speech. She is actually a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution. She has an ancestor who fought in the Revolutionary War. And she gave just a wonderful speech about the meaning and importance of this battle. It was the only Revolutionary War battle ever fought within, well, it wasn't Sullivan County's borders at the time. Sullivan County didn't exist, but it became Sullivan County. Area. It's now a county park, the Minisink Battleground Park, a beautiful place to visit, wonderful trails, moss-covered, under forest, especially on a hot day, a great place to go.
And Recycling Basics talk with Cassie Thelman, recycling queen of Sullivan County, is coming up on Tuesday.
She is great. Another wonderful county employee that we have. Cassie is our recycling coordinator. She will be Tuesday the 29th at 6 p.m. at the library in Monticello speaking about recycling. And it may be called Recycling Basics. And you're like, well, I sort of know how to do that. No, she's going to tell you things you've never heard about before and give you some interesting tips and tricks. So it's free. And if you're in the Monticello area or looking for something to do that Tuesday evening, you could do far worse than go to listen to her talk. In fact, I think you could hardly do better.
I still have questions. Like when I, this morning, I'm like, can I recycle this mushroom container? I guess I have to wash it out. And you know, questions. People have questions.
Give her a call too. 807-0291.
Put her on speed dial. She'll hear from you like eight in the morning. Listen.
She would not mind. It actually, I think, you know, a lot of public employees, people think, oh, they don't want to be bothered with me. But no, you're the reason we exist. You are, you not only pay our salaries, but if we can answer questions and help your life be better, you've given us a reason for being.
Well, look at that, Dan
it's
Hoost.
True. It's true.
G-I-D-H. If you don't get enough of Dan Hoost on Friday, you can certainly get more Dan Hoost on Sunday in a different hat that you wear. You are with the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. Are you the president of the
board?
I'm
the board president, right. Yes.
And so you'll be at Riverfest.
I will be at Riverfest. That's our big, big event. Every year we have it towards the end of July. It'll be this Sunday, the 27th. And I am always the drink tent's captain because it gets hot and humid, so I know where I want to hang out. But I also get to meet so many people there as well because, except maybe for a little lunch break, I am right in that tent all the time, handing out all sorts of drinks. We'll have water, tea, lemonade, nothing alcoholic. Everyone's like, oh, drinks tent captain, I'm going to come see you. No, I'm not serving alcohol. It's not good for you on a hot and humid day anyway. So and we have restaurants along Main Street, but that's where I will be. I hope people turn out. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We close down Main Street. It is the biggest event in Narrowsburg all year long. We have a lot of fun. If you come by the drink tent, you'll find me. Just say hi.
Say hi to Dan. Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Sunday.
Thank you. See you then.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Curtain Call, our podcast about local theater, talks to the one and only Jonathan Charles Fox. Tom Candela is here. After a break, this is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On this Old House Radio Hour, we're helping allergy sufferers breathe easier with expert strategies to cut down on dust, dander, and other common triggers.
One of the things we recommend with your bedding is washing them at a temperature of about 130 degrees. That way you're just extra careful of making sure that you get rid of those allergens.
Plus, the Splendid Tables' Francis Lamb remembers his New Jersey home. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Join us for This Old House Radio Hour from 8 p.m. American Public Media.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And Curtain Call is our podcast about theater. And the host and producer is Tom Candela. Tom is here. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Tim.
And I've been teasing this segment as just saying the one and only Jonathan Charles Fox
Yes.
How do you pin down Jonathan Charles Fox? He's a multi hyphenate.
He is, and you know, a lot of people know who he is.
Well, those who don't know, who is he?
So Jonathan Charles Fox he currently writes for the River Reporter, and his weekly
columnist.
Thank you very much. In my humble opinion, many people do know about. What they don't know is the man behind that column. And he goes way back. I mean, he was an actor, that was in some major motion pictures. He was on television, a television series. He did commercials. He is now a journalist, a photographer, and he's also a community advocate. And that is, I think, what we really brought out in this episode. And it's, I really, really enjoyed sitting down, talking with this man and getting to know him. It was a lot of fun, and he's a great character. And you're going to learn a lot about Jonathan that you don't know.
And he also has a one-man show as well, or is that
he
just
did.
Com- just
he did.
Completed
now
that?
Came, that was July 12th.
But he did that
passed.
This summer, so there's just all
he
kinds
did.
Of things going
and
on.
And I'm hoping that he does it again, because I missed it, because I used to know I was
you were away.
Yes, but...
maybe you'll get a special encore presentation.
I hope so, because he really is an interesting man, and very kind, and he was very generous in the show and coming on the program.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed him. So listen to the full podcast. You're going to get a little tidbit now. But the full podcast is already up and ready to listen to.
That's at WJFFradio.org. But let's listen to a portion of that right now. Jonathan Charles Fox on Curtain Call with Tom Candela.
This week on Curtain Call, we are joined by a true creative force whose career has spanned the bright lights of Hollywood, the intimacy of the stage, and the heart of the Catskills. Jonathan Charles Fox has done it all. He's an actor, journalist, photographer, radio personality, and a beloved advocate for the arts and culture of Sullivan County. He continues to capture the beauty of the Upper Delaware region through his lens and his work. So we're thrilled to welcome Jonathan on Curtain Call. So what drew you to the world of acting to begin with? How did you get a break into the stage and screen?
You know, my grandfather, I think, is responsible for sparking my interest in the arts in general. He got me involved as a child, in the Triple Cities Opera Company in Binghamton, New York, because they were looking for townsfolk for La Boheme.
Okay.
And that included little kids running across the streets of Paris. And I did it, and it snowed on stage, and there were costumes and lights and audiences and people cheering, and that light bulb went on.
I bet. It sparked a love of theater right then and there.
Absolutely. Huh? I said, this is what I want to do.
So from that early age, how old were you then when you first appeared on stage in La Boheme?
Five.
5 years old.
Yeah, five.
Okay, so that planted the seed.
It did.
Where did it go from there?
Any opportunity I had to get on a stage from that moment on, I took, whether it be at a school play in elementary school. And it just went from there to junior high and high school drama clubs.
Sure.
And I did summer theater. And I got into an out-of-town workshop production of a show called I'll Die If I Can't Live Forever. Was it that? No, it was The First Day of Us, pre-Broadway, you know, working on it in Binghamton, New York kind of thing. I was 16 years old, and I was cast in what turned out to be a Broadway show.
So did you go make it to Broadway with the show?
Yes, we were there for 24 hours.
Oh, gosh.
I worked on the show for about 3 months
with
the company as part of the ensemble, and it wasn't a very good show.
Okay, so what was next after that?
So I started taking some classes during my senior year in high school.
Right.
And then I started doing summer stock and so on and so forth. I wound up going to New York and having a little bit of a career after I graduated from college.
So what were some of the other stage productions that you were in?
I wound up getting a job at the National Shakespeare Company in New York. And so I did shows from Ibsen to Shaw to Brecht and thought quite a bit of myself, getting reviews in the New York Times. And that went on for a while. I was one of the lucky few. I was a working actor. I did the musical version of a lot of things because I looked so young. That was my career, was about looking young. I mean, obviously, it was about acting. But once we got to Hollywood, certainly, and even on stage in New York, it was about how I looked.
So how did you make that transition? You went from the stage and theater in New York City.
I did.
Now we're out to Hollywood. How'd you get out there, and what was the first thing you did out there?
Well, it wasn't planned at all on my part, and I honestly had no desire. It wasn't part of my dream to be on TV or in commercials, which I did quite a bit of extensively, or film. None of that was on my radar. I wanted to be a stage actor. That was my goal, and that's what I was doing.
Right.
And while I was doing it, and working at the National Shakespeare Company, I did a production of, I was involved in a production of The Taming of the Shrew, and it was 1978. And I played Tranio.
Okay.
Which is the bee guy. You know, he follows Lucentio all around and explains to the audience exactly what's going on because it's Shakespeare. I won an award for it that most people are unaware of. It's a theater award called the Golden Hanger. Most costume changes in a production in any particular
Love
year.
That.
I had 27 costume changes.
Wow. Hope you had a dresser.
I had two. I got a little bit of attention for it and a couple of nice reviews. And there was a crew in town in New York looking for locations and characters to do a television version of the film Fame.
Okay.
And they saw the review and they came to see me and they asked me to fly out to LA to test for Fame, which had already been on the air for a year. And I tested for that and they hired me then and there.
Wonderful.
And I wound up moving out to LA. Amazing. It happened very quickly. I mean, I went to work, you know, 3 days later. I was 21.
Yeah,
I think.
You're young. Yeah.
I had been hired to play 15. And it all just happened very whirlwind. It was very exciting.
I bet.
It was very exciting. I'm like, I'm in Hollywood. I had not planned it, but I knew what Hollywood was.
And a show like Fame. I mean, at that time, Fame was big, right?
It was huge. Yes. I was a character actor, and I was hired to play one of Sharofsky's music students who played the oboe.
Right. And did you play the oboe?
I did not.
Okay.
But I got paid extra money because I didn't.
Oh,
because wow. They had to teach me the finger rings. I'd go into the studio and do everything that I was taught to do, and then they had to lay it in the track because right. I didn't know how to play it.
All right, so you went on from there. Then eventually you got a Better Off Dead and Racing with the Moon. Tell us a little bit about that and your experiences now.
Yeah, I made a couple of really lousy movies, and I made a couple of okay movies like the ones you just mentioned. That's because of Fame. And what Fame led to was bits on Different Strokes, One Day at a Time, The Facts of Life, The Jeffersons, you know. So all of that led to what you're talking about. It's Better Off Dead. The film was interesting about a cartoonist, a young cartoonist with a vivid imagination and his cartoons come to life, et cetera, going in high school.
Yeah.
So what do you find in high school?
What?
Nerds.
Yeah. And I needed one.
They called me.
Right.
Racing with the Moon is a wonderful film.
Yeah,
I got hired by Richard Benjamin, who I admired so much, who directed the film. Yeah. So when I got hired, I met with him. And it was about high school students getting ready to go off to war. So that high school also had a nerd, and they hired me to play him. And my role was sizable.
Yeah.
I wound up doing about 3.5 weeks in Mendocino with Sean Penn and Nicolas Cage, and Elizabeth McGovern was brought in right at the 11th hour. And day by day, that story about boys going off to war, including the nerd, turned into a story about Sean Penn's character and Elizabeth McGovern's character falling in love with each other.
Wow.
So my page is cut.
Oh,
and the story changed. So I filmed a lot. But when it came time for the premiere, I think it was Paramount Studios, Richard Benjamin called me at home and he said, I'm really sorry. Oh. And I said, about what? And he said, I don't want you to get there and find out you're gone. You're just gone.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't leave a single scene?
No. I'm in the movie here and there. I pop up here and there.
Okay.
But that's when I was dubbed the king of the cutting room floor. That became the story of my career. Racing with the Moon is a good film, but it killed something in me.
I did. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because at that point, was there a decision made that I've had enough of this California
that's
stuff?
That's exactly right. That's exactly what happened. I called home every night, to answer your question, crying.
Oh.
And saying, I'm hating every minute of this. I was playing the nerd for the 10,000th time. It's not what I envisioned in my career when I was doing Fiddler on the Roof or Brecht or Shaw or Shakespeare.
Did you come back to New York to the stage, or did you now morph into your photography career?
I morphed into my writing career. I actually started writing, in my humble opinion, back in California.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been writing it for 25 years.
So it was called that? It was called
It was my very first, in my humble
Brilliant
opinion,
name,
was a review of Gypsy that went viral before the word viral was a word.
Right.
So I said, all I can do is write about the world of arts and entertainment. And that's what I started doing. And here we are.
All right. You've had such a varied career. It's like one artistic thing to the next.
I keep reinventing myself, and photography and writing certainly go hand in hand. It's called photojournalism.
Sure.
And it was not something I ever had any interest in doing whatsoever. But when I came to the Catskills and went to work for a newspaper, I said, I need a photographer. And everybody looked at me and just laughed at the editorial meeting and said, need a photographer? They said, you got to take pictures. I said, I'm not a photographer. I'm a writer. So I went and took pictures with God knows what. And every week I'd come in and we'd go back to a new editorial meeting would come up and they say, you know, Jonathan, your copy is fine. The words are fine. We like the column just fine. The pictures, not so much. One day I was out walking a different dog. Three dogs ago, this was. I was out walking the dog when I lived on Swinging Bridge Lake, and I saw a baby skunk, and I had my camera with me, and I took a picture of the skunk, and then another picture of the skunk, and another picture of the skunk, and I put them on my computer at home that night and said, oh, my God, photography.
Those are good.
Photography. And I fell in love hard with photography and really delved into it. And here we are. I am happy enough to say I'm an award-winning photographer. I've had a couple of photographic exhibitions, and this pleases me very much. I find the photographic process itself to be extremely artistic and creatively fulfilling.
That's great. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention now your community service, because in addition to all these great things you've done, you also named the Paul Harris Fellow back in 2020. Tell us what that honor means.
The Paul Harris Fellow is a recognition that is bestowed upon individuals who are not Rotarians, to the best of my knowledge. A Paul Harris Fellow recognition, they are nominated by Rotarians, and it's people who are recognized for, I mean, when they announced that it was happening, I said, why me? I was stunned. But it is people who are recognized for their work in the community.
Yes.
And it's kind of a big deal. And Mother Teresa is a Paul Harris Fellow. Boris Yeltsin is a Paul Harris Fellow. Jimmy Carter, Paul Harris Fellow. And Jonathan Charles Fox.
Amazing.
And here we are.
Amazing.
It was an honor. And it is an honor, and I still don't know why I got it.
Well, well-deserved, in my opinion. That's great.
I appreciate that.
Well, having done all these wonderful things that you've done, having all these life experiences, what advice would you give to someone coming up looking to live a creative and multifaceted life like you have?
Yeah. I would say some very trite things. And I said so to my goddaughter when she was coming up in the world, and she showed an interest in this, that, or the other thing. Yeah, money is a good thing to have. It's not about money. And what I would say to Corey, my goddaughter, is follow your bliss. Because in my humble opinion, a life without creativity is not a life worth living. It's about the creativity. It's about the creative process for me. I'm not an accountant. So what drives me is the other side of the brain. And for me, and it has always been thus, unless there's creativity involved in some form of my life, I can't be happy. The theater is everything to me. Theater is in my blood. It will always be in my blood. And whether I like something or hate something makes no, never mind. What I want people here to do and why I do what I do is to get them out and go see it and experience it and support it. That's my job. You go, you support, you sit, you experience the magic of theater. If somebody does that because they read that in the paper that week, right, then I've done my job.
Very good. Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for being on this episode of Curtain Call.
Thank you.
You are a big part of this theater community and you keep it alive.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
It's Tom Candela, host and producer of Curtain Call, our local theater podcast, talking to Jonathan Charles Fox. You can hear the full episode and past episodes at wjffradio.org. Just go to the shows tab on the navigation bar, drop down to see podcasts, click there, and you'll find it along with other podcasts and other community podcasts that we host as well. We'll be right back with culture reporter Valerie Manzi and The Muse in Rosendale. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Afro-Dominican writer Alejandro Heredia on his debut novel, Loca. We'll also hear Eve Ewing talk about her new book, Original Sins, The Miseducation of Black and Native Children and the Construction of American Racism. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, it's Catherine Marr, CEO of NPR. Federal funding for public media has been eliminated. That means that the NPR network is moving forward in an uncharted future. But our commitment to you will never waver. Please give today to support the kind of journalism that democracy relies upon. Here's how to make your gift to this station, and thank you.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi is speaking to Karen Ellen, founder of The Muse, a hive for the arts in Rosendale, about how the creative space came to life and what's happening there. Tonight at 7, it's the all-female trio VBK, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, bringing humor and harmony to the stage. And then tomorrow, it's a swing workshop with world-class dancer Brian Lawson. Here's Valerie speaking with Karen Ellen, the founder of The Muse.
Welcome, Corinne Elan, to Radio Chatskill.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are the founder of The Muse, a hive for the arts in Rosendale. So I'm delighted to have you here. And if you could briefly tell us about how you founded it and why.
Well, at first I intended to create a space where artists and audiences could connect in some sort of a welcoming and vibrant space. But that clarity actually only unfolded over time as I was doing it. The seed for what would become The Muse was actually planted in early April of 2023 when my then choir director, Debbie Lamb, wondered out loud where to house her vocal ensembles, since our usual rehearsal space had been shut down due to the pandemic.
Yes, so I interviewed her, actually, a while back.
Yeah, she's a wonderful choral director. So when I found the old Market building for sale on August 31, I immediately placed a bid on the building, knowing that this was going to be the space for us. And at the time, I didn't really have an exact vision yet, only the really urgent sense that our choirs needed a home and that broader art space might grow from there. So after the closing on October 23rd of 23, I began a 7-month renovation, trusting, albeit with fingers crossed, that something solid would take shape. The Muse officially opened on June 1, 2024, and fortunately, true to my intention, it has since organically blossomed into exactly what it needed to become, which is, as you mentioned before, a hive for the arts, which is buzzing with creativity, connection, and joy. It's just a wonderful place to be for so many of us.
And you offer a very wide variety of events and workshops and entertainment there.
It's mostly musical events. Our concerts cover a wide range of genres, from Indian folk and jazz, world music, and others. We launched a unique platform that's called the Discovery Series. You could equated to a kind of a LinkedIn for live music, where aspiring artists get introduced to each other and to the Hudson Valley music legends. And soon we're going to be adding hours of show tunes and classical music, and then a themed monthly sing-along. And then beyond music, the Muse also offers theater and dance performances, private and group vocal lessons and workshops, and ongoing weekly and bi-weekly practices like the drum church, tai chi, arts and crafts workshops, gallery space for visual art, and along with both private and public arts-related events.
Wow, you've got it covered. Can you give us your website?
Absolutely. Our website is www.themuserosendale.org.
And this weekend you have two very interesting performances coming up. One is VKB. I've seen them. They are wonderful. I even have a couple of their CDs. Tell us about them.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, on Friday, July 25th, we're kicking off the weekend with the VKB band, otherwise known as Vicky Cristina Barcelona. And on Saturday, we're hosting the very first swing dance workshop that is then going to be a party after the workshop that is led by Brian Lawton, who is an amazing dancer here. But VKB, what they will bring, a number of arrangements and interpretations of Tom Waits songs that are inventive, melodic, and very unusual as they're influenced by Latin, klezmer, zydeco, 60s girls groups, Middle Eastern rhythms, and other musical genres. And as you know, so the band consists of three women who are multi-instrumentalists and drums, percussions from around the world, harmonium, ukulele, guitar, accordion, banjo, bass, ukulele, harmonicas, various bells and whistles. Promises to be a fantastic show.
And that's Friday at what time?
The doors are at 6:30 and the show is at 7 o'clock. But I would recommend, since a fairly long awaited show in the Hudson Valley, for people to come a little bit early. So come closer to 6:30 than to 7.
And the next day you have Brian Lawton, a world-renowned dancer, whose many, many credits include Swing Out at the Joyce Theater, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Shakespeare in the Park, Red Hot Chili Peppers. He's currently artistic director of Hudson Valley's Vannevar Caravan Dance and Music Company. Ryan's dance workshop is scheduled for Saturday, and that is for interim and advanced dancers, which will be followed by a swing dance party open to everyone. What times are those happening?
So the workshop starts at 6:15, and then the dance party after that starts at 7:30. And it is both swing dance and Lindy Hop.
Well, you have a fun weekend coming up there in Rosendale, and thank you so much for taking the time to share all this wonderful information with WJFF listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Truly appreciate it.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Manzi for that. A reminder that a lot's going on this weekend. You can find out about events in the area at our community calendar, wjffradio.org. We'll be at a few of those events. Tomorrow, I'll be at the Calicoon Country Fair in Calicoon's Main Street. We'll also be at Borscht Belt Fest on Sunday in Ellenville, and also at Riverfest Sunday in Narrowsburg. Come by, say hi. Check out our new 35th anniversary t-shirts designed by local artist Naya. They're beautiful and great. And then also you can take our survey. We're looking for your feedback as we weather these storms of defunding that have come our way. But we're defunded, not defeated. Your financial support is essential to keep us going, though, and keep this vital public service in our community. Stand with us. Donate at WJFFradio.org or come see us in person at one of these events this weekend. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
Hey, it's Kimberly Izar. This week on Farming Country, I'm heading to the breathtaking Shohola Falls in Pennsylvania. Did you know that Pike County is home to 18 watersheds? We'll hear from Rachel Marks of the Pike County Conservation District about why these waterways matter and what they mean for our environment. Plus, have you noticed the giant elephant in Jeffersonville? All of that and more this week on Farming Country, Saturday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Recently, we heard a series of songs about animals here on The Back of Loaded Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, on Radio Catskill. Starting next week, we move on to songs about modes of transport, starting with songs about trains, including music from Billy Bragg and Sandy Denny. Please hop on board on Sunday afternoon at 3.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, some showers and thunderstorms are likely mainly in the afternoon, otherwise partly sunny and a high of 85. Tonight, mostly cloudy, humid, clear later, a low of 63. For tomorrow, less humid, partly sunny, and a high of 83. For Sunday, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms, most likely after 2 p.m., cloudy, high 76. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.